This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Sports Illustrated College Football Rankings Instant Reaction Show here again. I'm Pat Forte, joined with Brian Fisher. And these rankings actually matter, not as much as the Selection Sunday final rankings 5 days from now, but they do tell us some definitive things about this field. Brian, what are your biggest takeaways from looking at this new top 25?
I think my biggest takeaway is, man, do we use the word penultimate to describe these rankings way too much. But James Madison, welcome to the party, ranking in the top 25, number one. And that means, yes, that's right, Duke on ACC, the final championship game there on Saturday night. If Duke wins, we are not getting an ACC representative into the playoff.
James Madison gets into the rankings, the Sun Belt leader at 25th. 24, North Texas comes in, playing in the American Conference Championship. Iowa at 23, Georgia Tech at 22, Houston 21, Tulane at 20. So there are three group of five teams that are in the rankings, are Tulane, North Texas, James Madison. And we'll see if one or more of them wins a conference championship and gets into the field. Number 19, Michigan, 18, Arizona, which took a big jump up after beating Arizona State, finished 9-3. Virginia, USC, Utah. Then things get really interesting. We have Vanderbilt at number 14 and did not move up despite smashing Tennessee in Knoxville. Interesting. Meanwhile, Texas moves up three spots, jumps over Vanderbilt, did beat them head-to-head. Has lost one more game. Miami stays put at 12. BYU stays put at 11. And the two other big news items to me are Notre Dame moving down a spot and Alabama moving up a spot, and what that may mean if somebody is going to get knocked out of this thing.
Yeah, I think that the big question in my mind is, and you mentioned it, Pat, there, just the slight shifts that do change things a little bit, especially going into conference championship weekend. And if you do kind of bracket it out just a little bit, I think it is going to be interesting because that does produce some rematches with Alabama moving up to their current 10th spot and then Notre Dame moving back. It does produce a couple of rematches there in terms of Notre Dame playing Texas A&M again, Alabama playing Oklahoma again. So that could be a little interesting thing going into the SEC championship game in particular, is thinking about, all right, maybe if Alabama does lose, maybe they'll stay in the field. That's kind of the indication we get from these rankings from the committee right now. But not only that, maybe they will move them back a spot so we get some fresh matchups for that first round, because I don't think anybody really wants to see some rematches, much less two of them in the first round of the playoff. And otherwise, you know, I think it is also setting up certainly a big weekend of really watching other conference title games. I think that's the big thing for, you know, a lot of the interested fans out there. This is maybe one of the more interesting conference title games weekends that we've had in a long time. And yes, you know, you could probably look at things from a playoff perspective in the Big Ten not really mattering. And certainly it seems like Ohio State and Indiana, those two teams are pretty much locked into a quarterfinal berth of some sort, that first round bye. But, you know, that's a one versus two matchup. That's going to be very big for both of those fan bases to win a Big Ten title. So I think there's still interest in that. But everybody else, probably late at night on Saturday night, can Duke get this job done and almost punish their conference? I was just saying, how awkward is it going to be for Jim Phillips to have to hand that trophy over on Saturday night, if that's the case? If it's handing it over to the Duke players, as excited as they will be to win the ACC, that's a pretty big deal for Duke, especially this season and the way they've kind of gone up and down and won in the league, but not won any of their non-conference games. How crazy would it be that we could have one of the Power Four conference champions not make the playoff this year?
Yeah, that's Duke. I mean, yes, Duke would be very excited because it'd be their first outright ACC championship since 1962. So it'd be a great moment for them, but it would be a terrible moment for the league. And that would be a hard one to grit your teeth through. Jim Phillips can do it. He's a professional. But, yeah. I mean, if it literally knocks your entire conference out of a playoff that everybody was certain you were going to be in all season because you're one of the Power Four conferences. That's a major blow to credibility, and it's an indictment of having too big a league with not enough common opponents and a tiebreaker system that keeps your best team by many spots out of the championship game. You know, the Virginia is five spots behind Miami there. And so for Miami to not even be playing in that game is a bad look for the ACC.
And I think there's also going to be a whole lot of people interested on Saturday morning with that 11 a.m. local kick there in Dallas, looking at that Big 12 championship game. Because if BYU wins, that's another one of those bid stealers in the bracket, too. You know, Notre Dame would essentially be out. I think it's pretty, you know, it's a lock at this point that Texas Tech is going to be in the field, even if they were to lose that game in Dallas. Because honestly, they've not only beat BYU, they blew them out there in Lubbock. So you can't really move way out of the field after taking a loss to a team that you've already beaten. So I think that's the other domino, if you will, of this weekend is in that Big 12 championship game as well. A lot of interested fans, I'm sure, in terms of Miami, in terms of what's going to happen this weekend. I think their path is capped at this point. You know, we'll see if they move a little bit closer to Notre Dame. I'm sure that's going to be a debate topic even next week. We could maybe see them flip. We've seen that in the past. You go back to the very first committee rankings in 2014. You know, there was a swap between with Baylor and TCU back in the day in 2014. So it can happen going into conference championship weekend, even though teams might not end up playing. So there's some drama this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt that and if you're watching, if you're sitting at home watching during the day, that certainly the Friday night game, right, will be of great interest. That's the American championship game between North Texas and Tulane. We're reasonably sure the winner of that's getting in, right? But then Saturday, it's, I think, at noon, that Big 12 game. And, I mean, if you're Notre Dame, especially, you are, and you're not playing, you're just on pins and needles watching that game, knowing your playoff fate is riding on the line right there. Did you, while we were having the audio difficulties, Brian, did you touch on the Notre Dame-Alabama movement?
A little bit. You know, I think that is interesting, too. And I kind of brought it up earlier, Pat. I think if Alabama were to end up losing, I think this is the committee kind of saying, because they moved them up a spot, that they are still going to be in the field if they lose to Georgia, especially if that's a close game. Obviously, they've already beaten the Bulldogs. They have that thing over Kirby Smart, as you wrote about back in the day when they played their initial meeting. And so I think they would swap Notre Dame with Alabama just because I don't think anybody wants to see two first round rematches. That, you know, as important as this first round and these games are, and to see these big brands play, I don't think anybody necessarily really wants to see Notre Dame play Texas A&M again. Yes, it would be in College Station versus South Bend. Obviously, Alabama would be in Norman instead of you know, being at home in Tuscaloosa. So I think that's something that the committee might consider and maybe are indicating by moving Alabama up a spot ahead of Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. I would, if I'm Notre Dame, especially, I'm like telling the committee, why don't worry about that right now. Let's worry about who should be in the field. And right now, you have taken us and moved us down behind an Alabama team that was life and death to beat a 5-7 Auburn team. Like, what changed in the last week between those two? I mean, Notre Dame played a weaker opponent in Stanford than Auburn, but Auburn's not good. And so you are rewarding Alabama for a 7-point victory on the Plains, in which that, first of all, it was a bad, sloppy game. But secondly, that was a down to the wire, like, are they going to pull this thing out or not game. So, I mean, if I'm ranking the maddest people out there tonight, I start with Miami. And
yeah,
it's now an annual tradition for Miami to be 10-2 and mad and left out. But right after that is probably Notre Dame. Texas and Vanderbilt are mad. Texas moved up, but not enough to get into the field. And we're going to hear so much now about, why did we even play Ohio State? Why did we play that game and lose? That's what's keeping us out. No, what's keeping you out is losing to Florida, in fact. But, and then Vanderbilt, look, we did all we could do. We're 10-2. We just crushed Tennessee in Knoxville, something that Alabama probably got pretty good credit for beating Tennessee in Tuscaloosa. They beat them worse in Knoxville, and they got no credit for it. They did not move up. So this, to me, those are the maddest people to me. It's Miami, it's Notre Dame, and then it's Texas Vanderbilt in a blanket finish.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. And I think that the other big takeaway to me, too, that we haven't touched on yet, is simply the fact that Ole Miss did not move down. You know, I think that was a big talking point throughout the week, given all the Lane Kiffin news. All right, he took several of his assistant coaches. And let's face it, the committee was done debating by the time it was kind of announced by really both schools. But that, you know, Charlie Weiss Jr., some of the other assistant coaches that left with Lane Kiffin to go to LSU would be back for this playoff run for Ole Miss. So that the committee did not consider that at all. They were kind of flying blindly, and they did not choose to move Ole Miss down. They actually moved him up, obviously, one spot. So I think that's good news if you're an Oxford business at this point. That Grove is going to be packed for the first round game, and that's that looks like where things are headed there for Ole Miss, even though they don't have their head coach.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're Ole Miss, you're a lot happier tonight than you were last night. That's for sure, or Sunday night, because your playoff has not been taken away from you. You did not get booted out, and you didn't get booted out of a potential hosting situation. So for them, this is good now. And the news came out today that Charlie Weiss is going to coach in the playoff. Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss Jr., I should say, the offensive coordinator who is going with Lane Kiffin to LSU, but has basically been lent back. He's on lease back to Ole Miss for the playoff, which, another indication, unpopular opinion perhaps, but I do think Lane wants Ole Miss to do well in this playoff. And maybe that's partly just so he looks like less of a heathen here, but still, the actions are speaking by giving Charlie Weiss the chance to go back and call the plays for them. And so, look, if you're sitting there and you're Ole Miss, say, all right, you know, we're ticked off at our coach, but we're still going to have a home game. We're going to have our play callers on offense and defense. Let's roll with it. So I think that's a significant outcome for them. We got a question.
Well, I do.
Oh, go ahead.
Before we go on that, I just want to say, before we do, I almost pity Pete Golding a little bit that this is how he's going to make his debut. You know, as head coach of the Rebels, you know, you want to talk about a pressure packed situation. You know, I recall a couple of years ago, obviously, when Brian Kelly left for LSU initially, and Marcus Freeman was kind of thrust into and hired as head coach. You know, his first game was the Fiesta Bowl, you know, against Oklahoma State. They got out to the big lead. They ended up blowing it in the second half, if you remember. And that was kind of the start to his tenure. All right. Well, that was just a regular old bowl game. Not, you know, things were not quite as pressure packed as playing for a national title, to be at home, to have that crowd, to have part of your staff already out the door and worrying about packing and getting their families moved and all that stuff. That is a pressure packed situation for Pete Golding to walk into. Now, you add on top of all the layers of hatred. Yeah, he could definitely earn some brownie points and an extended honeymoon with that Ole Miss fan base if he wins the game. But if he loses, that is a tough one to walk into for Pete Golding.
I'm telling you what's going to, if they lose at home, it's going to be there. People will initially double down on hating Kiffin and saying he caused all this, but there will be some criticism for sure for Pete Golding too. And why did we make this guy the full-time head coach? What are we doing here? You're right. This is an incredibly pressurized situation to walk into. I mean, you really can't overstate it, given the first playoff game in Ole Miss history, home game, and everything that has swirled around the program. So a lot of drama in the Grove for sure. We do have a question. You guys feel free to dump in your questions to us via TikTok, via social media, whatever the case may be. We've got one here coming. Would Miami or someone make it in if Duke wins? No. Or would two G5 teams make it in? Yes. And what about if BYU wins the Big 12? That's the other thing. And we do have a question, another question from that we'll get to in a second here. But, you know, I think we covered most of those scenarios that, you know, BYU gets in, Notre Dame gets out, unless Alabama absolutely gets smoked and they drop them two spots. Miami is not getting in this thing at this point. I just don't see how that's going to happen. It was, you know, in Texas too. I don't see how that's going to happen either, unless, you know, Chris Del Conte rolls over to Grapevine to the selection committee hotel with a lot of oil money and just pays off the committee and says, get us in there.
Well, I mean, the tough thing for Texas is you're behind Miami, you know, and I think not only is there that kind of 10-2, 9-3 debate, but the committee would love to avoid all of the criticism that they would have that they're already going to get, frankly, from this Notre Dame versus Miami head-to-head debate. So if they can include both of those teams in any way, I think they're going to do that in favor of leaving Texas out. And I understand, you know, I was there, I was listening to Steve Sarkisian, you know, stump for his team, and he made some valid points. But at the end of the day, the reason that Texas is not in the playoff is not because they went up and played Ohio State and lost to the Buckeyes. It's because they lost to Florida on the road, a very, very bad loss that has weighed Texas down. And, you know, they also struggled against Kentucky and Mississippi State, the bottom of the SEC. That's the issue with Texas and their candidacy. They struggled with the bottom of the league.
Yeah.
And I think that more than anything, even though they moved up in the rankings this week, that was almost because of that order and because of the way they're stacked right now. There is no chance Texas is playing in the playoff.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And that gives overtime against Kentucky, I believe, and then down 17 against Mississippi State in the second half, maybe even in the fourth quarter. I can't remember for sure. But, I mean, those were games where they were absolutely flirting with disaster to the very end. So, Texas has some good wins. And, hey, I'm glad you went and played Ohio State. Lost that game. It wasn't as close as the score, 14-7. It was 14-0 till the last minutes. So I'm just not going to shed a whole lot of tears for Team Bevo at this point. That goes along with the question here. If BYU and Bama lose, can Texas make the playoffs? No. If BYU and Alabama both lose, that's what sets it up for Miami, I think. It would be very hard to see Texas jumping over Miami. This is the point. We ran into this last year. Ward Manuel was the selection committee chair. But basically, Miami, Texas, Vanderbilt should be locked in their positions unless something really strange happens. And no, they aren't going to change no matter what happens this weekend because they're not playing. Their seasons are over. Same with Notre Dame, and that's another reason why Notre Dame being behind Alabama leaves Notre Dame with a pretty helpless feeling at this point. So if your season is done, if you're done and you're Ole Miss and you're A&M, you're like, hey, right on. We're in position to host a home game. If you are Oregon, same thing. If you're done and you're on the bubble or on the wrong side of the bubble, nowhere near as good a feeling.
I will bring up the fact that if BYU ends up winning the Big 12 championship game, that would obviously mean Texas Tech would move down. You'd be looking at the Big 10 getting 3 out of 4 byes. Now, they'd only be getting 3 teams into the field, but for the Big 10 to get 3 out of 4 byes, I think kind of reconfirms that this is the Big Ten's championship to lose. 3 in a row is definitely on the table. They have the 3, I think, elite teams that you could probably say are playing well right now, and probably 3 of the favorites to win it all at this point. So this is kind of the Big Ten versus the field almost, and especially so if BYU ends up winning and knocking Texas Tech out of that bye.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It is the Big Ten's tournament to win. Ohio State, I think, has been clearly the best team all year, and Indiana not far behind. I think, I don't know about you, I kind of always suspected Texas A&M was punching a little above its weight and was not a team that could go 12-0, 13-0. And they went 11-0, and that was great. Kudos to them. But got beaten and lost by double digits to Texas, really kind of dominated in the second half of that game. You were there. And then didn't make the SEC championship game. But those two and Oregon has been outstanding. You know, had the one loss to Indiana. That isn't a bad loss by any stretch. Had a close game at Iowa. A lot of people have had close games at Iowa, excuse me, over the years. So the Big Ten could very well win a third straight national championship. If that happens, Brian, do we say the Big Ten is the best conference in college football?
You know, the question is, what do you put the emphasis on? To winning it all? Playing with the elite teams, or is it depth? Because I think the depth question has unmistakably gone in favor of the SEC this year. Like, I mean, not only getting more teams in the playoff than any other conference, but more contenders. You know, we're just talking about Texas. We're just talking about Vandy. I mean, 10-2 at Vandy this year and on the fringes of the college football playoff discussion. And, you know, yes, you know, Mississippi State was not all that great. Auburn, obviously, you know, fired their coach and had to make a coaching change. He had, Kentucky was, they showed some flashes at times, but man, did they look bad, truly awful, offensively in particular. So like the bottom of those two conferences, I think there could maybe be a little bit of a debate, but the Big Ten has the elite teams, the SEC has the depth. And I think this maybe winning the title is going to be that kind of deciding factor between those two, because guess what? We're going to have this debate every single year. Big Ten, SEC, Big Ten, SEC. And truthfully, if you're the SEC, you would love to get the Big Ten this year, because you look at what the Big Ten has coming back next year, not only at Ohio State, not only at Oregon, USC's coming along, Michigan will be better. Washington with their coaching staff back and maybe some more development there. Iowa is returning a lot as well next year. So like the Big Ten, maybe they're addressing that depth question moving forward. But this is going to be a big year for both of those Power Two leagues.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good summation. It is clearly, I mean, the SEC's got five teams in the tournament, we think. I mean, as of today, they have five in. We'll see if that holds up. It is likely that it will. And then two more right on the doorstep. If you've got seven of the top 14 teams, according to the Playoff Selection Committee, you clearly have the best depth, and you have the best quality in the top half of your league. 7 out of 16 versus 3 out of 18. The next Big Ten team doesn't come until 16 USC and then 19 Michigan. So there's no doubt that, I think that, and if you look at the average scoring margins, I mean, Ohio State and Indiana have just beaten people up, and so has Oregon, because I think generally speaking, the competition hasn't been as good. Whereas the old, every week's a battle in the SEC. Well, there's a lot of truth to it. There is, because if you just look at the scores of the game. So, but hey, Big Ten wins a third straight. They can do all the talking, and it'll be very difficult for the SEC to counter that. The only way to counter it is to win it all. So we'll see. Who do you think is the best SEC chance to win the national championship here?
That's a good question. And I'm going to be curious. I'll be in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Georgia lost their center in that Georgia Tech game and didn't seem the same offensively compared to the last couple of weeks. So they really seemed to start rolling there. And maybe that was just a case of, it's tough to lose that in the middle of the game, especially against a team that wants to beat you up physically in Georgia Tech. So maybe that was kind of the issue there, but Gunnar Stockton didn't quite look like he did more towards, the earlier part of the year in terms of how he was throwing the ball, how he's seeing things. And so I don't think it necessarily is Georgia. I would have maybe said Georgia 2 weeks ago, but I think in terms of the absolute high end to where that team can actually get to, it might be Alabama. If Ty Simpson is dealing, that defense is forcing some turnovers. Yeah, we know they can't really run the ball, but if you're talking about like high end and a coach that has gone on a national title run before in Kalen DeBoer, I'm kind of leaning towards Alabama at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm still going to default to Georgia, I think, here. And if Ole Miss had Lane Kiffin, I might say them. They don't.
Yeah.
Their decision. But the Georgia situation, I mean, I think what you say is correct, that they offensively, they did not look good against Georgia Tech. I'm going to chalk that up to Georgia Tech to a degree. That was a desperation rivalry game for them. Yeah. They had been, I know from having been at Georgia Tech earlier in the year, like that, they were still haunted by that 44-42 fiasco, seven overtime, whatever the heck it was, Black Friday game the year before. They wanted badly to get revenge for that. They couldn't do it. And they're a hard team to beat. Look, I mean, they're not a great team, but they don't lose easily. If you look, the losses they've had have been close games. So I'm going to give that a little bit more credence to rivalry and just wanting to win that game than Georgia. There's something necessarily wrong there. So I'll default to the Bulldogs. But, I mean, if you ask me, give me the top four, I would take Ohio State, Indiana, Texas Tech, Oregon. I would probably put Georgia fifth on my list.
I think Ohio State is clearly far and away in my mind the favorite to not only repeat but really go on a dynastic run if you want to talk about what they are capable of doing. And just in that roster, what they have coming back for next year. I mean, this is a Ryan Day has things rolling. I think that's a team that They don't have the chip on their shoulder like they did last year, but they're almost playing with some confidence that you saw, you know, back in the you know, yesteryear when they were really rolling under Urban Meyer, Jim Tressel. They just got a little aura around them. And so I think they're clearing away. If you had to give me Ohio State versus the field, at this point, I'm still taking the Ohio State, which is I would normally not do that in this crazy sport of college football. We saw it last year when the number one seed got trucked there in the Rose Bowl with Oregon. Losing to Ohio State, but I think just the way the Buckeyes are playing, they're kind of the clear favorite to everybody. But Indiana has a shot for sure, not just on Saturday, but in this playoff, especially, you know, given some of the seeding matchups that they could have. We know Kurt Cignetti is fired up and can game plan from week to week for a lot of these opponents. I think Oregon is getting healthy at the right time. You know, hopefully if they can get some of their receivers back, and maybe they're playing that tune-up game with the group of five to where they get the timing and that's not an issue like it was last year with that long layover. I think Oregon is a team that is capable of winning it all. And then I think it is kind of a toss-up. Texas Tech. I see no reason why Texas Tech could not make a semifinal at the very least this year with that defensive line, with what they're able to bring to the table if Baron Morton is healthy on offense. So I think it's truly maybe more of an interesting playoff bracket overall than it was last year.
Yeah, no, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. I am by no means overlooking Texas Tech as a contender. Do you say that? I mean, they have been dominant all year. They had the loss to Arizona State, but Arizona State, quality opponent, especially at that point. I think they still had Sam Levitt and had some mojo and won the Big 12 last year. So they were kind of laying for that one. But, you know, I would say any of those top five, I give a very solid chance to actually win the whole thing, and we'll see how the bracket breaks down. We'll see what the draw is, which you always have to do. So we did that with college basketball. Who's got the easy draw? Who's got the tough draw? But to me, there's going to be a lot that we will find out, obviously, Sunday. Not just who's in, but what the matchups are. Real quick, just wanted to go back over the championship weekend schedule. On Saturday night, the games from a playoff perspective, we're watching Troy at James Madison at 7 o'clock. That's an ESPN game. And then North Texas at Tulane at 8 o'clock, ABC game. So you'll want to get two screens going, probably to watch those. And then
I would say, yeah. Pat, just now that I'm thinking about it, UNLV is sitting out there at 10-2.
Sure.
If they win the Mountain West and Duke wins the ACC, could you consider UNLV or even, I guess, maybe Boise State? Obviously, they're going to be at home in that one. But, I mean, it's not crazy to think that if Troy ends up upsetting James Madison on Friday.
Right.
And UNLV or Boise State, they could also be in a position to end up getting into this thing. So it is truly a fascinating championship weekend, not just on Saturday, but on Friday as well.
Yeah, no, that absolutely. That if James Madison gets beaten and that opens up and Duke wins, that opens up a possible back door for UNLV, which would, boy, that would really be something in the first year under Dan Mullen. So a lot to watch on Friday for sure. And look, one thing that we have seen in the past, I hope this doesn't happen this time around, but coaches that are changing jobs don't always still have everything fully focused on the task at hand. James Madison is in that situation with Bob Chesney, who is headed to UCLA. North Texas and Tulane are in that position with coaches heading to Oklahoma State and to Florida, respectively. So weird stuff may happen. And then but Saturday, the games of playoff import, BYU at Texas Tech, the game all of Notre Dame fans hold their breath and watch. And then 4 o'clock, Georgia, Alabama, and the two 8 o'clock games, Indiana, Ohio State, and then Duke, Virginia. Does Duke just throw one last monster monkey wrench into what's been a pretty weird season? All right, let's see.
A lot of interesting rooting that, you know, possibilities there if you're a non-Blue Devils fan, but it's going to be weird. I think a good portion of the country that is, at least is not in ACC territory is going to find themselves rooting for Duke, which I'm sure that produces some conflicting feelings amongst a few.
No doubt about it. Duke, it's so funny. I mean, the delineation, like, I don't think people think of Duke nearly as hatefully when it comes to football. It's just Duke football.
No.
Same with, like, Kentucky football, same with Ohio State basketball. I mean, teams that you despise the giant, but you don't worry so much about the other side of it. So anyway, that's pretty much what we've got for this week. Brian and I will both be writing columns tonight, so check out those, SI.com, our reactions to the rankings. And then we will be back with the podcast on Thursday morning. We'll talk all about this. We'll talk all about the coaching changes. We will discuss who knows what else when we get to that. We'll definitely be talking, previewing the games, making our picks as usual, all that sort of thing. So thank you for watching us, and we will talk to you all later.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.